312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Chris Jones will join us, the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk to him about the final Hamilton performance last night and look ahead to what's going to replace Hamilton.
Verboten.
That's what I was going to say. That was my transition.
Too easy.
Too easy. Jason Narduzzi's here, a longtime Chicago musician, talking about, actually, we're talking about your band, which is awesome, but it's because you're the story of your punk band, Verboten, which was when you were 10 years old in 1982.
Yeah.
You guys got together, a bunch of kids from Evanston, and you did a 10-year-old punk rock band. Well, now that is the focus of the play named Verboten, which is at the House Theater, the Chopin Theater on Division, running January 16th through March 8th. Great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Great to see you, Justin.
What an amazing story. We were talking about it a little bit earlier in the program, just about the idea of being 10 years old, doing something that's just fun with your friends. Now, years later, getting to watch it in front of you unfold. So take us through this story. This is the story of your band when you guys were 10 years old.
Yeah. Before we start this story, I have a confession for you and Peter. The last time I saw you was backstage at Superchunk at Dahlia Hall.
Yeah.
And I had no idea who you guys were. Because it was out of context. I'm only used to seeing you guys at the studio.
So good.
And I don't know if you remember, I'm like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
And you guys are like,
well, we just
hey.
Figured you were a rock star. We figured, you know, we're in your element.
It must seem like I'm just being so rude. What happened was my wife and I got Billie Eilish tickets for our daughter, Eva. And
awesome.
Just before you guys walked in backstage, my wife sent me a video of my daughter finding out that she was going to go see Billie Eilish. And it's like, I mean, I was crying because she's
great.
So excited.
Yeah, right,
right. And she doesn't want us to share that video with anybody, which is fine. That's a personal thing. But so you guys walk in, so out of context. I'm excited for my daughter and my wife. They're going to see Billie Eilish. I'm about to play with Superchunk at Dahlia Hall. And anyways, apologize. I know who you guys are. I love you guys.
No, all good. It was funny because we got Mac and we were going to do the interview in the green room.
Yeah.
And it was funny because there was a full-on street festival happening in Pilsen.
Right.
Tell you how well you guys were loading in. So it was like a lot of chaos. And
it was hard
to
park, I remember.
Yeah, you would have no idea that Superchunk is in Dahlia Hall just based on the fact, first of all, you guys are completely unassuming. So you got Mac coming in and you're coming in. You guys look like just kind of like middle-aged guys. And here comes John Worster, who couldn't look more like a rock star. He's got his hair out. He's
6'3".
He's got his, he's ready to go with his drum set. But it was fun to watch. And I said to Pete at the time, I'm like, this is amazing to think that all these people are at this outdoor music fest. So I think there was a kid band that was like maybe 19 or 20 years old playing on that stage that was right next to you guys loading in. And I was like, there is Superchunk right next to them, and they have no idea.
That's funny. Yeah.
So, all right. So let's talk about Verboten.
Sorry. Yeah. No, you had such a good lead up to that.
No. So let's talk about this because I'm blown away by, you know, the idea of, because last time you were on, we talked about Verboten. We talked about how this all kind of came together. How long have you been working on trying to tell this story?
Well, I think when you and I were talking about it, it was because Verboten was on Sonic Highways, the HBO show that Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters produced. And, you know, that's really what got it started because the person who thought of this idea, a playwright named Brett Nevue, who's a professor at Northwestern and Red Orchid member, he's written 30 original plays, he saw Sonic Highways and then reached out, I think through my wife, they were working on something through a Evanston school together, and he asked her if he could meet with me to pitch this idea. So Verboten was my band when I was 10 years old when we started and 12 years old when we broke up, about a year and a half that the band was together, maybe 15 months. I don't know exactly. But what unusual about it is that we were trying to play punk rock. And I say trying because I don't know musically how important Verboten was, but we were definitely, because our singer Tracy was so charming and precocious and such a natural leader, we got great gigs. you know, we played with Naked Ray Gun. We played with Rights of the Accused. We played with Articles of Faith.
At 10, 11 years old.
I was 11 years old when we played Cubby Bear, January of 1983. I was 11 years old. And fortunately, my dad at the time drove me to the gig and brought his massive camcorder that he put on his shoulder and videotaped it, because I'm so thankful for that, because I think if I told somebody I played a Cubby Bear when I was 11, when it was a dive bar,
right,
I mean, it was a terrible neighborhood back
then.
Well,
we talked to Naked Ray Gun and others about that time. That was a different time. The Cubby Bear was kind of ground zero for the punk rock scene, just for the fact that Wrigleyville was not the Wrigleyville we know now. Cubby Bear was not
the
Cubby
Bear. No one wanted punk rock shows, so you had to go to, like, a desperate bar, you know? Or sometimes it was gay bars that were just like, oh, I think we like the fashion. Let's try a theme night or something. You know,
what was it about the music, about punk rock, that grabbed your attention at 10 years old? Because it's one thing, I think, even if you had the skill to be able to play guitar or play bass or play drums or sing, I feel like you'd almost mimic what you listened to, or did top 40 or what it might be. You never really think of, at 10 years old, being attracted to such a mature, even though it was not necessarily a mature music, but it was definitely for mature people.
It was progressive at the time. I think it was a number of things. I think, number one, we liked classic rock. We listened to The Who and The Kinks and The Stones and The Beatles, but our parents did too. So when we discovered punk rock, they didn't understand that. So that was our music. And I think, today you have these fantastic resources for kids in music. You've got School of Rock, and you've got YouTube, and you've got all these ways that they can find other people to play with. To this day, I don't understand how the four of us found each other, because it was sort of based on T-shirts. You know, there was a little bit more fashion back then. Now I see young kids, and it's not as many differentiations. But then it was like, oh, well, they're wearing a Ramones T-shirt, and they're wearing a Who T-shirt. Maybe we should try playing in a band or something. But I think it is interesting. We I think all separately had turmoil at home at different levels and different intensities, and we found each other. And I think one of my favorite parts of this story is that the four of us are still really close friends. Chris lives 6 blocks from me. Zach lives 8 blocks from me. Tracy lives in Florida, but we see her all the time, and we're in touch all the time. We formed this band. We were together for 15 months. We played some unusual shows. We played a Battle of the Bands at New Trier High School. I think all of the other bands were Rush cover bands. We were the only band that was playing original music, and it was punk rock. And thankfully, I think Chris's brother Rick was there, and he and some of his friends jumped on stage and jumped in the crowd. They kind of got the crowd going. Like, we had some of our family and friends there to get it going.
Right, yeah, right.
We didn't win, but I think that sometimes it's better not to win something like that.
Right,
you know,
right.
we were the outcasts in that situation and many others. But this whole story doesn't happen unless, you know, Tracy's cousin isn't Dave Grohl, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an unusual story, but Tracy's cousin, Dave Grohl, came to Evanston, Illinois when he was 13 years old. And this is a story he tells
at
Soldiers Field when the Foo Fighters play. But he came and we introduced him to punk rock, which was something he wasn't familiar with. And he's generous enough to shine the spotlight on this little band that we had, and also, you know, credit us with influencing him.
The great clip he has in the show where he talks about, I saw these kids playing what they wanted to play, and it was because of that freedom, or the ability to make my own decisions, that I got into music, and I wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think Dave was already playing Beatles songs and was messing around with the guitar, but it was when he came down in that basement and saw us practicing that it was, oh, write your own songs.
That's right. You know. And of course, write your own play about those songs many years later.
I didn't do
the music, but Brett did the play.
Right, so the fast forward, then Brett approached me 5 years ago about writing this, and he says that his idea was right away was a musical, and I believe him, but I think what happened was he pitched me on this idea, and him saying it should be a musical and you write the music, I think that was so terrifying that I just blocked it out.
Yeah.
I just don't remember that at all. I think I was just, you write your little play about my band, and I'll, you know. And then, but 5 years later, you know, it's, I mean, we're just, we're very close to
opening. Amazing. Yeah. It opens coming up on January 16th at the Chopin on Division. It's in collaboration with the House Theater. Jason Narducci is here. Of course, his band Verboten is also the name of this show. We'll talk more about how this is coming together and what similarities, because it's not necessarily, you know, autobiographical in the way that the all the things in the show happen. I mean, it's a play. Yeah. So let's talk about what the similarities are coming up here after the break here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Jason Narducci's with us here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, talking about his show Verboten, which is at the House Theater, which will be at the Chopin Theater on Division starting on January 16th. It's a story about Jason's punk rock band that he formed in 1982 when he was 10 years old. It's an autobiographical story. Brett Neveu did the book, and Jason did the music. You, to do this, to have somebody else write your story, is that difficult to do? To be a part of it, but also let somebody else write it?
A little bit, yeah. I think there was... He interviewed all four of us, and I think there was some growing pains, trust, you know, like who are we handing our story over to? And we wanted him to take liberties with the story. We wanted it to be a good show. It doesn't have to be exactly accurate, you know, everything happened. But some of the, you know, some of the things that are in the play people may not believe did happen. I can tell you one of them. Tracy was adopted to a family in Evanston with three older brothers, and they were all, you know, very conservative, golf-playing family, and here's Tracy with her shaved head and the safety pins. I mean, it was something else.
Right.
And this actually happened, and we put it in the play. Tracy's dad, one morning, was reading the paper, and he looks up to a family member, and he says, "Have you heard of this musical act called the Dead Kennedys?" And the family member says, yeah, Dad, I've heard of the Dead Kennedys, and they've been to our house. And he takes his glasses off, and, you know, what? Yeah, Dad, Tracy brought them to the house, and the second time she brought them to the house, they took a cab up to your country club and swam in the pool and had lunch on your account. Tracy told me that story. I was like, that's going in, you know?
It's those kind of stories. It's hard to believe, because it's one thing to have a band when you're 10 years old. There's the novelty of it. You're like, well, young kids playing rock and roll. Punk rock? Oh, my gosh. This must be so adorable.
But that's a good word for it.
Yeah, right. But it's unbelievable to think about at that time, and some of the most influential bands of all time, when you mentioned the Dead Kennedys or Naked Ray Gun or Dave Grohl, and people who have shaped the music and taken the music from garages to stadiums, were all in your orbit. They were all around you.
There's this great picture. I need to post this on social media. There's a great picture of us rehearsing in Tracy's basement. And Tracy is, this is in 1983, she's wearing a Husker Du t-shirt.
How about that?
And here we are, 37 years later, and I play with Bob Mould. I've been in Bob's band for 15 years. It's crazy. It's crazy.
How much did that experience of being 10 years old and breaking up when you're 12 and just being in this this sort of circle, in this orbit around punk rock, how does it inform you today? I mean, because you mentioned you play with Bob Mould, you play with Superchunk, other band, your own bands. Is that the same? Is that instrumental in how you became a musician? Is it just a flash in the pan? Like, what does it have to do with who you are today?
Well, I think it's everything. You know, one thing that the House Theater, you know, they're marketing a musical, and so they have this awesome poster, and then I think one of the tags is, you know, punk rock saves lives, which sounds super corny, but I believe that the four of us needed that. And it could have been anything. It could have been a chemistry kit that we, you know, were really good at and found our identities in that, or some other form. But it was punk rock, and that was what gave us it was empowering for me to write songs and get together with friends and create that sound, that loud mm-hmm. sound mm-hmm. together. And I needed that. I was only child in the middle of a divorce, and it was hard. So to have that, I'm sure throughout the rest of my life, it's been this thing where, like, well, what works for me? Well, music works for me. You know, I'm going to keep
on
coming back.
It almost serves as a center for you. Like,
it
a
absolutely
place to go,
is,
right?
Yeah. And it even started before Verboten. I mean, my dad took me to see The Kids Are All Right, the Who documentary, in 1979 when I was 8 years old. And it was a Sunday afternoon. We're waiting in line, and there's these two elderly women in front of us buying tickets, and the ticket guy is yelling through the glass, you know, "It's too loud. You don't want to see this," because the poster is these guys with a flag. They're just sleeping with a flag over them, and it seems adorable. And I just thought, even at 8 years old, I was like, "I'm going to love this. This isn't for old people," you know. And then we get in there, and the first song, they destroy their instruments.
Right.
That changed everything. That was it. And then my dad took me to see Cheap Trick at the Granada Theater, which is now where Loyola University is, and it's gone. But those two things started that motion, started that momentum.
I always think about creativity and like we said, like kind of finding your center at such a young age is obviously is formidable and it's going to help you grow. What are some of the drawbacks to it? Because a lot of musicians you're going to talk to who are going to talk about when they were 17, 18, when they understood what they were getting into, or they understood the craft or the artistry, that's when they took off. What were some of the things that you think changed you at being so into this world and being a part of this community when you're such a young age?
Are you asking what some of the drawbacks are?
Yeah, if there are any. I mean, I can put you on the spot on that, but
I mean, I just feel very fortunate. I think that I've had enough downs in this music thing to understand that when things are going well, you really have to appreciate it. I've been fortunate to not be in bands that tour too much. I think if I, you know, that would be tough.
Did you have to learn that? Is that something like as a musician, you know, you're like, "Oh Jesus, this is a lot of touring"? Did that experience of being in a band and having that moment and being around musicians at such a young age help you get ahead or find the, you know,
I think there's a
curve?
Here's a positive spin on going through a divorce when you're that young. I lived in 14 different apartment buildings in Chicago. Touring is nothing for me. You know, showing up in a new city and getting a new hotel room is like, all right, here we are. That's a natural pattern for my upbringing. I've met a ton of musicians who are incredibly talented but cannot stand the pace, the hurry up and wait of touring, and it drives them crazy and they just stop. It's always felt okay to me, in moderation, not, you know, I can't do 3 months or something, but it's weird how some of those things that were so negative at the time ended up helping.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. 14 apartment buildings.
Yeah.
That has to have an impact on how you view being committed, how you feel about being in one place for too long or being in one place for not enough time.
I'm actually not good at being in one place for a long time, you know. So yeah, it helps.
It's interesting. Jason Narduzzi is my guest, the musician who split single. Of course, he plays in Superchunk and also Bob Mould Band. And we'll talk about those experiences. And so I have so many questions. And we've talked before. I don't want to repeat myself. But just the tour life and how you balance being, a middle-aged guy with a family and being, you know, next to Bob Mould on tour, how that all works together. We'll talk about all that coming up here. The show is called Verboten, and it's a show that is really about Jason and his bandmates from 1982 when they were just 10 years old. It's a musical that's running at the Chopin Theater. It's in collaboration with the House Theater. It's called Verboten, and it starts on January 16th. We'll take our break here. We'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation. Jason Narduzzi here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 720 WGN, 312-981-7200, Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Jason Narduzzi is here in studio, a great Chicago musician who has split singles his band, Superchunk, Bob Mould. He tours with so many different bands and is one of the great indie rock performers here in Chicago. Verboten is the name of the show that's at the House Theater, that's actually at the Chopin on Division, starting on January 16th. It's about your band that you formed in 1982 when you were 10 years old. It's an amazing story about not just forming a band, but having success with that band. That's the thing. I could sit here and say, I had a band when I was 10. The four of us got, I got all the neighborhood kids together, and we did a sketch comedy show like Saturday Night Live, and it was great, and we had a lot of fun. But this was, to say the Dead Kennedys were in your rehearsal space, and Dave Grohl was hanging out, and all these people, you know, you're opening for Naked Ray Gun at the Cubby Bear when you're 11 years old. that doesn't happen to 10-year-old bands. That's not what happens when you're... Do you look back on that and go, wow, that not only was it amazing that we had chemistry to come together and play music, but to open up for Naked Reagan.
Absolutely. And I've had friends who are teachers ask me to come into their classroom and talk to them about music. And here, I wrote this song on the acoustic guitar and then press play. This is what it sounds like when we record it in the studio. And I'm looking at, I think it was sixth grader, so I'm looking at all these 12-year-olds. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, my first band broke up before I was your age. You know, it's just not normal. Again, thank you, Dad, for recording the... for videotaping the Cubby Bear thing.
But yeah, right.
It is. It's an unusual story. And I think Brett's done a great job of taking what we wanted him to do, and he's really done it well, is capture the spirit of the band, which was four people that were trying to recreate a comfortable place for them to hang out, a family in a way. And I think he's put in a lot of humor, which... was there, and there's some very moving moments, and there's also one of the goals for me in writing the music was to have the kids play punk rock songs, mm-hmm. but the mm-hmm. parents and the siblings play music that's influenced from them, 60s and 70s. So there's an arena rock song. From one of the dads sings this song called Rock Dreams Never Die, and it's like full on, you know, lasers, and I mean, we're going all out, and I think that gives the punk rock songs more punch when they come in. If it's, you know, if it was mm-hmm. 20 punk rock songs, you'd get tired of it. But
was this your first foray in doing this kind of work? I mean, because you've done so much. I mean, I've had you on a couple times recording your own music, going out on tour, all sorts of stuff. Was writing a musical, is this your first time doing this?
It's the first time I've written the music to a musical. I had a friend that I went to high school with named Ben Beyer, who wrote a play in 2002 called Take It Deep, and I did the interstitial music for that.
Okay.
I forget which theater company produced it, but I met a lot of Chicago theater people then. Dado directed that. She's a member of Red Orchid. Guy Van Swearingen, I met at that point. He's the artistic director at the Red Orchid. So it's funny, I see a lot of these people now, and I met them, you know, 17 years ago through that.
It does reinforce the idea that Chicago is a creative place, because when you think of the musicians who are doing things that are making a living, and not just making a living, but being influential in the discipline. And you talk about the people at Red Orchid. I mean, that's Michael Shannon's company.
Yeah.
That's where you have the best of the Chicago theatrical community on display.
Yeah.
But there is crossover. You see this all the time where musicians and theater goes and others, you're all at the same, you know, meeting place, whether it be a bar, coffee shop, or whatever it might be. But there is a lot of crossover between the disciplines.
I played a show with Michael Shannon at the Empty Bottle eight nights ago, and all of them were there, and it was hugs. And, you know, my wife hadn't seen Dado since that play. So, Chicago's an amazing place in that way. And it's encouraging for me to see a lot of these people who are lifers. You know, it's not just a whim. It's not just something that they're, you know, experimenting. And this is what they're going to do mm-hmm. with their life. And they've been very successful at it.
Was there a point at when you were 12 years old and you had the breakup that you said, I know I'm going to be a musician? Or was there a point where you said, you know, I'm going to try something else?
I got away from it for a bit. I fell in love with basketball, and in middle school I was very passionate about that and wasn't playing music very much in 7th, 8th grade, freshman year too. And then freshman and sophomore year I started to pick up the guitar again. And I think that break was good. I think you know, the Verboten experience was intense, and I needed to just kind of be a kid, you mm-hmm. know? And then when I came back to it, it wasn't until college where I started to get really intense about it.
It's also about, I mean, because, you know, obviously you are skilled musically and you're able to pick this stuff up, and you've been able to, I would assume, evolve in your craft from 10 years old to who you are now. But a lot of it is place and time.
Yeah.
Because you have, even in 1982, there was this, I mean, just this beautiful thing that was punk rock music that not a lot of people knew about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just that there was this counterculture anthem that was from the music. And I would assume when you were in college, that's when you're really getting into the anthem that is indie rock, a lot of the stuff that you're playing now. So it is a little bit of place and time matched with your ability to be artistic.
And it's running into people or meeting people. You know, this Brett wrote this great part, and I hope I'm not giving too much away, but there's a veteran punk rock band that appears in the play. And it's right when Verboten, the version in the musical, isn't sure if they're going to be a band anymore. But they're supposed to play with this veteran band, and they see this veteran band play, and they're just too good, and so they're about to give up. And one of the guys in the band, the veteran band, leans over and goes, "You guys are in Verboten? I've heard about you. I'm looking forward to hearing you." And that's it. That's all they needed
that's
to
all
hear.
They needed.
That has happened to me so many times. I mean, in 2000, I think it was about 2002, I lost my record deal with Epic Records, and I started a painting company and just kind of settled down a little bit, and I would play covers every once in a while with friends. And 3 years later, Bob Mould sent me an email saying, "Hey, do you want to play bass in my band?" I mean, you need people to reach out and say, "I'm looking forward to hearing what you're going to do next."
But you also have to have the faith that's going to happen, right? You can't, because as you said, like as a musician,
being in the right place for sure.
You have to be okay with the hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
Reality that is the creative, the music industry, any creative arts.
Yeah. And super lucky and super fortunate. I mean, obviously, if you work hard, you're in a better spot. And I think being able to get along with people is a huge thing. And I try to do that. I don't know if I always succeed at it, but I try to. I try to be a good band member.
Well, it's. I wonder, because you have had the ability to be a part of movements, and we talked about the punk rock stuff that's going to be that you'll see in the show Verboten, which starts on January 16th at the Chopin. Again, you have found yourself in a position with Split Single, but also with Superchunk, with Bob Mould, of course, where you are. I mean, you're part of a movement. You're part of these bands that people, when I say Bob Mould, people don't necessarily think, "Oh yeah, great musician." They think of a time and place in which they know Bob Mould. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see it that way? Do you see music as a time and place kind of compass?
I don't think about that kind of thing very much. I just think about music that I'm passionate about. And, you know, Bob's right up there. I mean, probably for me, it's like Pete Townsend, Rick Nielsen, and Bob Mould. Mm-hmm. You know, those three guys are it. And so I still pinch myself that I get to play and record with Bob. And he's just one of those rare people that doesn't disappoint you. You know, they tell you don't meet your heroes. Well, he's something else. You know, he's even more impressive the more you get to know him. And I'm very, very fortunate in that way.
Jason Narducci's with us. Verboten's the show that's at the Chopin, and it's at the in collaboration with the House Theater. There's a lot of music in the show. You wrote the music.
20 songs.
So you need a cast in this that's going to be able to play this music. You need to get two sets, you said, as the parents and also the kids that are cast in this. How do you go about doing that?
I didn't.
I was going to say, but I mean, do you have any hand in, I mean, you write the music and everything, and do you have any hand in, do you have to show up and be like, "No, what I want with the guitar part is this"?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, I mean, Nathan Allen is the artistic director at the House Theater, and he's directing the play, and he's, the story's in great hands. Brett wrote an incredible script, and we also have a great musical director, Matthew Munoz, who is much better than I am at communicating to musicians what needs to happen.
Really?
Yeah, I'm confident in my ability to write, and I can show guitarists and bassists voicings, and I can tell drummers, maybe try this. But as far as he's a teacher, and I'm not very good at that. So I love working with him, and so my job is to basically, I'm giving feedback about the story. It's, you know, I'm protecting the Verboten story, mm-hmm, not that mm-hmm. it's being, you know.
Yeah, right.
And also just overseeing the music and making sure that the songs have the vision and the impact that I want them to have within the story. And right now we're in the heat of it, because, you know, we're just about to go into tech. And I just got an email before I came on the air with you that said, "We might need a song here." So, I mean,
you gotta write
I might
stuff.
Be going home tonight to write a song. I know for sure there's modifications we're making, and it's we're getting into.
We've got a couple more minutes. We can just write the song here.
you got a guitar.
Right? Yeah. We'll get it. Communication, that's, oh man, I didn't think about that. I mean, I'm not a musician, but I would assume that communication, especially when you're playing in an ensemble with a band, is key.
Yeah.
How do you, if you're not the kind of guy who communicates in the way that you want to put people in the positions. What kind of communicator are you?
Well, trying to be patient. the cast is incredible. I mean, the level of talent, you know, this whole time, honestly, the vain part of me has been sort of like, good luck casting Jason. And then they went and found Kieran McCabe, who's, you know, more talented, better looking, and nicer than me. He's really, really impressive. And Crystal Ortiz is Tracy. I mean, the whole cast, it's not even fair to single anybody out. But we're basically handing them these songs and sometimes going, okay, we're going to drop it a whole step. And they do it.
They do it.
Incredible voices, fantastic actors. It's and I like it that they've – it was important to me that there's seven or eight authentic punk rock songs from the time. And people – you know, punk rock fans from that time will go like – oh, that's Jason writing an Articles of Faith song. Oh, that's Jason doing a Circle Jerk song. Or that's Jason doing the Ramones. You know, like, the influences are clear.
Yeah.
And the references are clear.
When you're a musician, when you're touring with Superchunk or Bob Mould or anything like that, how does the communication work there? I mean, are you, especially when you're in studio or you're recording, and it might be someone else's song they wrote or any of the stuff, how do you communicate as musicians? I mean, is it as simple as saying, play this, play it this way? Or is it kind of you guys have your own vibe to figure out how it all kind of comes together?
We kind of know the language already. Neither band rehearses.
It's unbelievable.
We just start. You know, maybe a longer sound check at the beginning of a tour. Just do your homework. You know? I don't know. It saves a lot of time and money.
Do you think that's from experience, from you guys just getting older, and you're like, hey, if we do our homework and everyone does what you
and
do as a professional?
And trusting. I think when you're younger, you feel like the four of you need to be in a room and work on a song for a week. And then you get older and you're like, no, you don't. Yeah. And you get better, I think. I think Bob's become, I mean, his songs are still incredible, and Mac's songs with Superchunk are incredible. Bob is a little bit more intense about parts, and he's more meticulous. He'll say, like, let's hold off on that, or don't sing the harmony until the second time. He's got a little bit more of a producer head, and Superchunk is just sort of like, the guitars are slightly out of tune. Anyways, oh, you're singing on that song? Okay, I don't know.
But that's what we love.
I can't hear you. You know?
and it's interesting, because as you get older, does the approach to not just the music and the creativity, but the profession of being a musician change? Like we talked about in the break about touring.
Yeah.
You know, I used to, the thought, I mean, you think about touring in any form, it's you guys go out on the road for 3 weeks at a time, and you don't talk to your family, or you just, you know, you talk to them at night, and then you do the show, and then you're in a different city the next day. It's changed a little bit.
Well, what's changed is people don't buy records. And so touring is a necessity. I feel terrible for artists that can't physically tour. And it's hyper competitive. So I'll tell you a story. I mean, speaking of Dave Grohl, the Bob Mould Band was on tour of the Foo Fighters in December of 2017. And we're backstage, Bob, John, and I, and Bob said, I've got 2019 mapped out for touring.
Wow.
A year and a half ahead.
A year and a half ahead.
That's how if you want to get the rooms that you want, you have to do it that far in advance.
Even Bob Mould, yeah.
You know, we're competing against all, and everybody has to.
There's a handful of select clubs in every city that are going to be able to.
Those are the ones you want.
Right.
And we've been doing this long enough that you go like, oh, well, let's try to go back there. You know, in Chicago, we're going to go play a couple metros.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, at the end, I was like, okay, cool. And I, you know, typed it into my calendar and all this stuff. And then there was a pause. And I said, well, I guess you better go write that record. He hadn't even written the record yet. But that's how you have to think about touring.
Wow.
And I'm very fortunate to play an artist that get asked to do Riot Fest and these cool festivals and these good bills. But it's tough. I see younger bands who just have to work nonstop. Just to get any kind of traction and play the clubs year after year.
Let me do this. I'll take a break because I want to follow up on that because I think about with your band and the deal you had with Epic Records and you're right. I mean, changing how the music business has evolved over time, you've been a big part of watching that that kind of shift. Jason Narduzzi's in studio, a longtime Chicago musician. He's his own bands, and we're talking about his first band, Verboten, which was when he was 10 years old. It is the, I guess, the origin story or the genesis material for the play Verboten, the musical, which is on stage at the Chopin Theater on January 16th in association with the House Theater here in Chicago. We'll take our break here, come back, finish up with Jason Narduzzi here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Jason Narduzzi in studio. The musician is his show. His story is on stage at the Chopin Theater on Division Street, which is a great theater.
Beautiful
theater. We had we had them in studio to talk about that theater and just its history. It's great. And great Wicker Park Theater right there at Division and Ashland. And Jason's, the show is called Verboten, and it's the story of Jason and his pals at 10 years old when they formed Verboten in 1982, broke up in 1984, I guess it would be?
Somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there, 10 and 12 years old.
I think
old.
We formed in 82 and broke up in 83. But yeah, 6-week run. I can't even believe this, but some of the shows are sold out already.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But it's making all the sort of preview lists and the Chris Jones and people talking about looking forward to this. And you've been working on this for 5 years. And again, it is amazing to think about your experience of working on the story of your own childhood. That's a part that just kind of racks my brain.
I'm still processing it. I was talking to Chris, the original bassist from Verboten, who's married to Nora O'Connor, by the way, who's a very, very successful Chicago musician. And Chris and I were getting together, and I was like, you know, and this is just a couple weeks ago, I said, I feel like what this is if someone took our band Verboten and made a comic book out of it. And he's like, yes! And that's how we're able to process it. But, you know, I think it's about families. You know, I think as much as it's about the music, it's about families. And, again, Brett Nevue, when you have somebody, you know, Jeff Award-winning playwright who's had 30 original plays in London, New York, Chicago. I mean, he's legit. And Brett Nathan is very experienced too, and he told the actors, don't touch a word on this. This is the real thing. And it's cool. I mean, of course, Brett's making his own changes, but it's an amazing process to be part of. One of the most rewarding things for me about it is that I get to rewrite Verboten's music.
So you get to go back in there, yeah.
It turns out that 48-year-old Jason's a much better songwriter than 11-year-old Jason. I think we are going to use one song. I think there's going to be a moment, I'm not positive about this, but there might be a moment where the crowd sees the real Verboten and hears a portion of a song. And I think that would be cool if we can pull it off. But otherwise, it's 20 original songs. And we're so excited.
It's always because music lives in moments, and I always think about, because you've mentioned, you know, how a texter just texted in, said Cheap Trick at Granada Theater, the opening band off Broadway, and you agree. And also that moment in 1982, thinking about the band and playing Cubby Bear and opening for bands like Naked Ray Gun and hanging out with Dead Kennedys and Dave Grohl in the basement. That's all a part of Chicago music history. It is, and it lives on in memory. People have it in space. So to have this ability to tell the story to new audiences, or to tell the story even in the rearview mirror, to look back and say, remember this seminal moment of Chicago music history, too is a mind blower.
It is. I think people get a kick out of it. There's a lot of local references, but I think it's also, I think teenagers would like this. I think it's got an excitement to it and a diversity that can reach, you know, it won't just be us 50 and 60 year old punk rockers that are like, oh, I remember that. I don't know why they would talk like that, but it's something else. I'm blown away by it. I really am.
When you look back on your career, and I mentioned right before the break, just the evolution and the ebb and flow of being on Epic Records and having your own band and playing with your heroes and Bob Mould and Superchunk and other, and even looking back to when you were 10 years old, the whole thing, does it make sense? Does it make sense as like a your life, like as a musician's life?
In some ways. I mean, last year, a few things happened that blew my mind. I mean, almost a year ago to the day, for 3 days I was in The Pretenders with Chrissie Hynde. 2 days of rehearsal and a show.
Wow.
And that was, you know, that was like being in rock fantasy camp or something. You know, I mean, we're talking about Verboten. I remember being in Tracy's room with her holding that first Pretenders record. It meant everything to us. And so to now, you know, have this working relationship with Chrissy, okay. And then another moment, I was with my family in Evanston, and we'd been together with other family members for the whole day, and I picked up my phone to check in, and I saw that Cheap Trick was playing in Schaumburg or something, Naperville, for a festival. And I looked at my wife. I was like, can I sneak out and go see Cheap Trick? She's like, sure. And my friend Brian, Brian St. Clair, who's in Local H and writes The Accused, actually, is now their production manager. And I texted him. I was like, hey, I've snuck over. Is it okay if I come in? He snuck me in, put me on the stage. At the end of the show, Robin Zander's voice started to go. And Rick Nielsen looks over at me and points. And they brought me out, and I sang Surrender with Cheap Trick.
Come on. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. What?
What?
I didn't sleep that night. Because 10-year-old me that saw Cheap Trick at the Granada with Off-Broadway was like, "You what? You can't?" Wow. Yeah. Insane.
And that's the power of music. I mean, the ability, and you've said it through this entire interview, this ability to be kind and to be in the right place, but to work hard. You're in spots where people rely on you or know that you can do it, and they know you're ready to go. You can sing Surrender.
Fortunately, I got it right. What if I messed it up? I wouldn't tell
Daddy's
you the story.
Right.
I wouldn't tell you the story.
Cousin's all right. I can't remember.
You already got it wrong, right. But I won't.
Yeah. Cheap Trick shows up as we were kind of talking about the best Chicago musicians of all time.
Like, yeah.
We're doing the best Chicago movies right now, and we've dipped a toe in the water on the best Chicago musicians, which has already turned out to be a disaster. There's way more than 64 to do a bracket.
Where's Blues Brothers?
But Blues Brothers is at
top
the
eight.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
a top. It's
My
a,
dad was in that.
Was he really?
He was an extra in the Nazi scene.
So did he have to jump into the water?
No.
That's the...
He's wearing a blue shirt. I remember that because I have to freeze frame it every time it comes on cable. But he's in the back, you know, protesting
Illinois
the Nazis.
Right. Yeah. But Cheap Trick always shows up. You know, even though they're a Rockford band, they show up as everyone will text in and saying you can't have a bracket if a number one seed's not Cheap Trick.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from me on that one. They changed everything for me.
All right, so 312-981-7200 is our phone number, and it's interesting because people have texted in throughout the night talking about. You know, just their understanding of punk rock, meaning they know what you're talking about in 1982. They were there, or they get, you know, what the references are here when you mention some of these bands.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That how at the end of the day, when you think about putting the show together, it's almost like the music's the music isn't for 10-year-olds. So beyond the shared moment and that you guys needed to be together, how did you stumble upon bands like Dead Kennedys? How did you stumble upon...
Well, that's another thing
That's
where,
crazy to me.
Yeah, that's another thing where the environment... So just you saying that reminded me that my stepdad, Jim Iberg, was a founding member of Special Consensus, which is Chicago's pride and joy for bluegrass bands. And
okay.
He showed me a lot of guitar things that... I didn't take lessons, so he would pull me aside, and there's some of that in the play, which is great. Some really funny scenes, and there was a record store in Evanston called the Record Exchange on Dempster. Which, fast forward 8 years, when I was 18 years old, I ended up working there. But when I was 10 and 11, we could go there, and they had the punk rock sections that we could go through. It was just accessible,
mm-hmm.
and you could listen to WNUR and hear, you know, punk rock and the college stations and. And I think, again, like, all we needed was a little spark, and it was like, that's our music. Our parents don't understand it. We
right.
understand it. That's ours. And so it was our early rebellion, you know,
yeah.
our early way of saying we reject you, and we're creating our own thing.
Do you see your kids doing the same thing? Do you see kids today doing...
No, and that means I'm doing a better job of parenting.
But
I was talking to my son Sean, who's 15, and I because there's some things in this play that are, you know, tough and certainly exaggerations and it's not 100% accurate, but there's things that were said that are tough to hear, and I needed to tell him that, you know, me and your grandpa are okay now, you know.
Yeah.
And I went through some of the things, and he paused and he said, I think I'm having a better childhood than you did. And I said, well, Great.
Thank you for that.
That's all I want to hear.
That's all I want to be living for, right? All right.
I'll make my own mistakes, I'm sure.
Sure, yeah, right, yeah. right. The play is called, the musical is called Verboten. It is on stage at the Chopin Theater, which is right there at Division in Ashland. It is in association with the House Theater of Chicago. Jason Narducci was in Verboten when he was 10 years old, 1982, and this musical is about that experience. It starts on January 16th. It runs for 6 weeks into March. And like I said, it'll be on stage at the Chopin right there in Wicker Park. Jason, always a pleasure to have you here, man.
Great to see you, Justin.
It's great to have you here.
See you, and Peter.
Yeah, and continue the great work, both with your solo work and also with the bands. We love it, and thanks so much. All right, coming up, Chris Jones is going to join us, talk about the final show of Hamilton, which was last night.
And I'm going to give him a foot rub. I need a good review here.
Yeah, right. I think I saw a little beef starting on Twitter. Uh-oh. About an umlaut.
Oh yeah, you got to get. So in the German word verboten, there's no umlaut, but we put one on there because we loved Husker Du. So an umlaut goes on the band name Verboten,
right?
And some people are getting very technical about it.
What's their product?
No. I don't know.
It's just people.
Yeah.
That's what people do.
That's what social media
does. All right. So Chris is coming up to talk about the final show, which was last night at Hamilton, and what might be in store for Chicago Theater next. And that could be Mean Girls and other shows that are coming to Chicago. So that conversation, and Verboten, of course, that conversation coming up right after the news here on 720 WGN.